Hi Amanda, welcome to the show. I appreciate you taking your time out of your day to let us interview you and get to learn from you.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. So, yeah.
Awesome, great. So to get started, I want to give our audience a brief introduction into kind of who you are and kind of some of your running history, what your goals are now, kind of what motivates you, those types of things. So let's talk a little bit about kind of some of your goals now that you're working towards, kind of what you're doing as a runner now.
Sure. Well, I, this has kind of been I don't know what if I want to call it a transition year for me, but I've been running for about 15 years now. And I actually started a triathlon, and kind of through triathlon, after several years, discovered that running was more my passion
Okay.
and started focusing on that. And so this year, or the past year or so, I came off of some injuries and started reading about minimalism,
Okay.
buying into it. And so I've worked pretty hard over the past year to completely change my form, change my shoes, all that.
Okay.
So that's been my big focus more than anything. I'm hoping to kind of cap off the year with California International Marathon in December and hopefully PR there. Hopefully it's all going to come together for me by then. So,
Yeah. So when did you start the transition to like the minimalist movement?
it's been about a year and a half, 2 years now.
Okay, so it's been a pretty long process.
It's been a long process, and I think it has to be. I started out a little bit too much too soon and got injured, like
Okay.
many people do.
Right.
I had to kind of back up, start over again, and definitely it takes patience and it's taken a lot of time, but I'm really thrilled with where I am now with it.
If you don't mind, I'd like to kind of keep going into that a little bit.
Sure.
When you so when what kind of sparked you to first try the minimalist movement? Did you have an injury that you couldn't shake, or was it
Yes.
just something you wanted to try, or?
No, it was definitely the injury that I could not shake. I had an ITV injury that was just getting progressively worse, even after I stopped running.
Wow.
It was a horrible injury. And so I actually went down to Shepherdstown, West Virginia to Mark Fucagello's store. He was having a big panel on minimalism and I sat in on it and it was one of those aha moments where I just said, this is the way I've got to go and try. So I started talking with him throughout orthotics that I've been wearing, throughout the stability shoes and started incorporating some barefoot training into my regimen.
Okay. So now, did you start with like including like some strides and slow running and then still doing some other running in regular shoes, or because of your injury, did you just pretty much have to do only barefoot running or minimalist running?
No, I was I, what I started doing was doing a little bit of barefoot at the front end of all of my runs.
Okay.
And again, I did too much of that. But there's a reason for doing it first, the barefoot before you put your shoes back on, and that is just you get the you're not going to be heel striking in your bare feet. You're going to learn how to do it properly. And then the thinking is then you put your shoes back on and hopefully that form is going to carry over when you're back in your shoes.
Okay.
So that was my path to getting there. And I still believe to this day my form changed from the pure barefoot running.
Okay. And so you've been doing that for a few years now, and how much of your current training do you do in minimalist type shoes or barefoot?
100% of my training now is in a minimalist shoe, and I do still throw in some barefoot miles here and there at the beginnings of some runs.
Awesome. And you're pretty much healthy for the most part, as healthy
Absolutely,
runners can be.
absolutely. And I mean, I'm going to sound like a zealot, but it's worked really well for me, and I have never been more ache and pain free. I
Wow.
don't have I used to have the tight hamstrings perpetually, tight piriformis, all that kind of stuff. It's gone, so. I think it was worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Obviously, it probably took a lot of work, and it was probably a frustrating process. But obviously, it's paid off because being able to run injury free is a huge thing, not only long term, but just for your mental health to just be like, yes, I can do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, my whole family's happier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So kind of moving on and continuing with kind of what you're working towards, what actually kind of motivates you these days in terms of, you said you've been a runner for a long time and you've accomplished a lot. Like what kind of motivates you to get out the door, early to get in to slog out those miles when it's 100 degrees? What's that internal motivation for you?
There's no big secret other than the fact that I honestly just love it. And there are very few runs that I dread, honestly. And even when one, if there is, a day where I just don't feel like it, I know that once I'm out the door, I'm going to be happier that I got out the door. Mm-hmm. And I know that I have goals I want to achieve, and I'm not going to get there if I'm not going to be dedicated to the goals. So I guess that's what does it for me. Yeah.
Cool. So here's the big question, if you don't mind answering. What is your goal for CIM, if you don't mind putting it in?
Okay, that's fine. Now I'll put it out there. Well, I'm 46 now, and I'm running out of time to PR. So anyhow, I just want to go sub 330. So okay. I'm sitting at 332 right now, so I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Very cool. Yeah, I know there's some runners that are kind of scared to put their goal out there, especially in such a public forum, but
yeah,
sure. It's good that you are. So.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, kind of moving forward, one of the big reasons that we wanted to have you on the show today is, you know, you're fairly, you know, I guess maybe famous for your blog. And it's, can you say the address of it so we can, so our transcribers can get it right?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's MissZippy1.com. So.
Okay, so it's MissZippy, the number 1.com.
Exactly.
Very
yeah.
cool. And we'll throw up a link at the bottom of this interview so people can check it out.
Great.
It's a great blog. If anybody hasn't seen it yet, you kind of blend a good, it's a good blend of kind of what you're going through personally in your training, along with some of your thoughts on, you know, training in general. I enjoy reading it because it's a good read between kind of just seeing what somebody else is doing and also kind of learning bits and pieces here and there. So.
Right. Thank you. Well, I appreciate that coming from you.
Thank you. So anyway, yeah, one of the reasons that we wanted to have you on here is, you know, so far we've had a lot of elite runners, people that are training professionally who kind of do this full time, which is a fantastic thing when when most of your day is surrounded by, you know, when am I going to get my two runs in for the day and how am I going to sleep and nap and do all the massages. And I wanted to have you on here because you're somebody that, you know, running isn't the only thing that they do in their life.
Right.
And so I wanted to kind of get an idea from you of, you know, how you balance things with the family and everything else that you have going on. So I guess in that question, it may be a little vague, but, you know, how do you balance getting everything in training-wise? Is it something that you have a very strict schedule? Are you pretty flexible? What kind of works for you?
You know, it's kind of a little bit of both. I am fairly loose in terms of my training. Like, I don't lay out a, you know, 4-month marathon training plan for myself. I mean, I'll sit down with the calendar and mark out my long runs going backwards so that I make sure I'm getting, you know, that I'm at the mileage where I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
But on a week-to-week basis, you know, I know what my kid's schedule is going to be. I know what kind of workouts I want to get in. And I just kind of start mentally preparing for the week and, you know, saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And then make it happen. And it, you know, definitely involves getting up very early in the morning. It definitely involves sometimes if I'm carpooling and driving a kid somewhere in the evening, you know, drop them off at their, like my son swims, for instance, drop him off at his pool.
Mm-hmm.
And if a couple lanes open, jump in the pool myself, get in a swim or run or whatever it might be, you know. It's you know, I do think scheduling is key. I do. And, but at the same time, you can't be a slave to the schedule. You have to be a little bit flexible, you
right,
know,
right.
And 1% of the time. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, how do things like that work when you have a run schedule, like maybe a kind of an important workout that you really wanted to hit and then something unexpected comes up? You know, how do you deal with that? You know, obviously from an actual schedule perspective, but more mentally, you know, how do you kind of gear yourself down from that? Because obviously it's disappointing when you miss a workout that you can't hit.
Right.
You know, how do you kind of gear yourself back up and not get so frustrated that, you know, you lose momentum?
Right. Well, first off, I think if you're getting them done first thing in the morning, that is less likely to happen, much less likely to happen, that scenario. But when it does happen, you know, say my husband has to go travel and we weren't planning on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to be able to shuffle things around, you know, figure out where else you can fit something else in and not beat yourself up. I mean, you know, if you're consistent 90-95% of the time, you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So missing one here or there isn't the end of the world. But again, a little bit creative planning and creative reshuffling and figure out where you can, you know, if for instance, you're going to do a track workout and now mm-hmm. you can't. Find another day in the week where you might be able to sneak it in or find another way to incorporate some speed work in, you know.
Yeah.
Having a treadmill at home helps if, you know, I mean, I hate the treadmill and I will stay off it at all costs, but on a rare occasion, you know, it's what has to be done to get it in.
Right,
so.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to do the dreaded hamster wheel.
Exactly.
So you do most of your bigger workouts or more important workouts in the morning? That's how you typically try to schedule it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got a great group of running partners, and we meet regularly, 3 times a week, our long runs, our speed work, and then one other run in between that we all do together. And we meet anywhere from 5:15 to 5:45 a.m. for those workouts.
Yeah, nice. Probably nice to have that accountability to get you out the door sometimes on those winter mornings or really swampy summer days.
Definitely. Yeah.
I think you brought up a good point there when you talked about that you don't have to get in 100% of the workouts, or that, you know, if you're looking at, for example, a 4-month marathon training block, if you miss one or two workouts here or there, it's not the end of the world. In your experience, that's been okay for you in terms of, like, you know, having to shuffle things around and still having success on race day in terms of, you know, missing one or two of those days?
Absolutely. I definitely think that's very true. And I think that it may be sometimes, you know, it ends up benefiting us. I mean, you know, more often than not, you're going to go in overtrained versus undertrained. And, you know, I think being slightly undertrained is maybe going to deliver you to the finish line healthier, happier. You know, I don't know. So I think it's okay. I think it's okay. Again, going back to consistency, if you're consistent month after month, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. We actually had a previous guest on who had a good quote that I think you'll appreciate. It was, it's better to go into a race 100% healthy and 90% fit than it is to go in 100% healthy and 100% fit and 80% healthy. And I think that's a great point in terms of, like, you know, sometimes missing those one or two workouts, like, really just gets you more rested and ready to go for the next one.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's very true. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So here's a question that I have for you that stemmed from, you know, I work with a lot of runners who are parents and mothers and really trying to balance that, you know, trying to find that, you know, wanting to be good parents, but also really wanting to achieve their goals. Do you ever find that there's a stress for you to find that balance where, I'm not sure if this is the best way to say it, but you feel like once, like, that you may be neglecting, like, the parental side to get in your mileage or, you know, training and that kind of stuff? And if so, like, how do you deal with that?
You know, the only time I would say that I feel a little bit of that guilt is sometimes on a Saturday morning, for instance, if I'm not getting in a really long run, one of my kids maybe has a game that's going to conflict with that time. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm going to go with the long run still. My husband's there. Mm-hmm. I'm still there with them the majority of the time. I work from home, so I'm here with them the majority of the time. If I miss a game here or there, it's okay. And I've never heard a complaint from my kids. So yeah, you have a little bit of that guilt, but mm-hmm. I think in the end, giving them a good example of being dedicated to something, mm-hmm. showing them how to work hard for something, and showing them a healthy lifestyle, I think those things are all important as well. So I guess that's my take on it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and I think the best thing too, I think that you brought up was, you know, like, showing them the healthy example of what it's like to be dedicated towards a goal. And I assume most of your family is pretty healthy and kind of supports you in your endeavors in terms of, you know, trying to accomplish your goals running wise, triathlon wise, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my husband's fit and active, and our kids are both involved in all kinds of things. I mean, and my daughter's, she's only 7, but this year she's gotten into the junior running club portion of my running club. So it's been kind of cool. I really like that. But yeah, so it's a very active family. You know, when we go on vacations, we're always doing something active, you know, hiking, whatever it might be, you know, together as a family. So I like that. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you said your daughter's getting into running. Is your son older?
He's older. He's 11.
Okay.
And he's done several 5Ks and triathlons and things over the years. But his loves are probably more lacrosse and swimming. So, okay. And, you know, I'm never going to push it. I want them to love running, and if they want to, you know, develop other things, that's great. As long as they're healthy, that's all that matters.
Yeah. I remember reading a post on your blog about you and your daughter doing a cross-country race together.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was a pretty funny story, so if you don't mind, could you kind of retell it or just
kind of go over it? That one was not such a fun event. She had done 3 5Ks prior to that this spring, and just done a fabulous job. You know, she ran the whole time. We had a good time together. This particular 5K was on a Friday night. It was one of the first hot nights we had. She just had dinner. We got there. We started out. Within, you know, a couple minutes, it was very clear this was not going to be her night. She was getting cramps, and we were very quickly in last place, and she hated that, and she started walking. At one point, she threw herself down on the ground in the middle of the field. And to top it all off, we got lost on the course. So we're out there in the middle of nowhere. And we finally came in close to the chute. And we were coming in backwards. We knew this, coming in from the wrong end. And the race director looked at us and he goes, "Well, honey, you've got another lap to do." I said, "You know what? She does not have another lap to do. She's done." So he let us come in behind the last person. And that was the end of that. And so, yeah, that was not our best race experience together. I'm happy to say she's gone out and done a couple of others since then and things have been okay. But, you know, with kids, you don't know what you're going to get. And all you can do is encourage and walk them through it. And, you know, so, yeah.
No, I thought that was a great story when I read it. And I was like, wow, I think a lot of the people that watch the show and the readers of our blog would really appreciate that because I'm sure they've had similar experiences or, you know, those types of things.
Yeah.
Along those lines, actually, a question that I get a lot or that I see a lot is, you know, how do I introduce my kids into running, you know? Especially, you know, I guess a lot of questions are, you know, how do I introduce them? What age is appropriate? What's your thought on that in terms of, you know, what age, you know, kids should start running? You know, how should you introduce them into the sport?
Right. First of all, I think probably every kid's going to be a little bit different in terms of what they can and can't do and what they want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, but we're very fortunate. We've got a neighborhood nearby where in the summer they do a family fun run every Tuesday night, and it's a 1 mile course. And that's how we started getting our kids into it, just taking them out there. I mean, my daughter was, you know, probably 3 when she was first doing it, but not necessarily running the whole thing, you know, walk, running, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we would just, you know, kind of encourage them along. And whenever we'd see a 5K, when they started getting around, you know, like my son probably did his first 5K around first grade, same with my daughter, you know, tell them about it, see if they're interested, and do a little bit of training, you know, mm-hmm. with them so that they can get there and do it comfortably and enjoy it. But I, you know, a cross country coach that I know here in town who's been coaching forever, his philosophy with kids is that you want to have them doing no more mileage than the grade they're in. So for instance, if they're in fifth grade, no more than 5 miles.
And that's per day or per week?
Well, in a race.
Okay. In a race. Okay.
So, you know, I'm loosely sticking to that. Again, both my kids are doing 5Ks in first grade, and I think most kids can handle a 5K, you know, around that age. But
yeah,
I mean, I definitely think you just have to be careful. You don't want to push and make it fun. You know, if you can design a 1 mile loop in your neighborhood and mm-hmm. get them to try it, you know, sometimes what I'll do is I'll, you know, on a Sunday, if I'm going out for an easy recovery run, take my daughter along for the first mile or so, and then bring her back, drop her off and go off and finish my run, you know, so different things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that helps. And especially, I don't have kids myself, but I can imagine that, you know, when you have young kids, they're always wanting to do what you do.
Exactly.
So I can imagine that they were pretty interested in running, if not from the physical aspect of it, like right away, because not all kids like to run, but
right.
at least from the idea of like, what's mommy doing every day?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to try that. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Those thoughts. I think the rule with the no further than their grade is, I think it's a great rule of thumb just to kind of initially get your kids going and then, you know, seeing how they adapt to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
Yeah. So kind of moving forward into a more training aspect of things, mm-hmm. How do you approach your training and map up your workouts for the cycle? You said that you basically you kind of start working backwards from your long runs. It seems that's kind of the, for you, seems to be the more important aspect of things.
Right.
And then how, you know, how else do you, are there any specific workouts other than the long runs that you look to plan, whether they be a certain amount of time out or that you want to get a certain number of runs in, either distance long run wise? Or some type of workouts?
Sure. I would say, you know, just on a year-round basis, I'm never going to go below about 40 miles a week. That's kind of my base mileage, I would say, in a long run, you know, around 14 miles each week. From there, I like to make sure I'm getting in, you know, at least one good speed session a week. And I usually do that on a Tuesday with my long run on a Saturday.
Okay.
And, you know, with the nature of the speed sessions, it's going to change from week to week and depending on where I am in a year. So right now in the summer, I'm doing some shorter races and the triathlon and things like that. So I'm focusing a little bit more on the shorter intervals and things like that, throwing a little bit of tempo work here or there, not doing more than about 3 miles worth on the track. And then if I shift into fall and more focus on marathon training, I'll probably be doing more tempo runs, more longer intervals on the track, more things like mile repeats, and more focus on marathon pace, you know, getting in some progressive runs, some marathon paced runs, things like that. And I like to have one midweek run that's a little bit longer too. If my long run on the weekend is 16 miles, I'm going to make sure I'm getting a midweek run of, you know, like 8 to 10 miles, something like that. Okay. So that my long runs never going to be, you know, my philosophy is you never want your long run to be too big a chunk of your overall mileage in one week. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah.
How has your speed work changed as you've gotten older? Obviously we all feel the slowdown a little bit, but have there been any changes that you've made in terms of maybe your mental approach or, it sounds like you've been training healthy for a while, but have there been anything that's propped up because of the speed work and things like that?
I would say one definite thing that I used to do was I used to be able to go out and race on the weekend and by Tuesday be back doing a speed session. I don't do that anymore. I mean, I'm racing this Saturday and Tuesday I'm not doing speed work. I'm going to just run easy and recover. It just takes my body longer to recover. And so that's definitely changed. Definitely, I think I'm slower at the shorter intervals these days. I think a little bit of that, fast switch turnover type thing is just, it's a little bit, it's not there as much as it used to be.
Right,
so
right.
Maybe something I need to work on more, it is more of a weakness these days. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. It's always interesting to hear. I mean, I think all runners have that natural slowdown. And
yeah.
Some of them don't want to either admit it or think that maybe they're the only ones that's happening to. And sometimes it's just good to confirm that it's, they're not the only ones. And it's something that you kind of have to work through.
You do. And you just kind of have to adjust for it. And, the old adage of listening to your body, but pay attention to it. And, if it's not working for you to do, 2 days a week of speed, dial back to one. And I don't think you're going to lose all that much. Whatever it takes to stay healthy and stay out there, is the way I look at it. Yeah. Yeah.
Another question. If I remember reading from your blog, you weren't always a runner, or I should say an athletic kind of fit person.
Yeah.
What led you to becoming, transitioning into somebody who's so dedicated about running and fitness and has such goals? Was there a turning point? Was it a gradual shift or?
I think that, that athlete was always there and I didn't know it. I grew up in rural Ohio at a time when girls really didn't do much. I mean, you could be a cheerleader and not much else. And so I think I kind of missed out on that and didn't, wasn't exposed to it. But I, after college, I became a gym rat and then I got into inline skating and discovered there was actually some inline skate races at the time. Mm-hmm. Got into doing that, and that led to the bike, and that led to triathlon, and, so it just kind of was like this gradual discovery process, I guess, and, as far as being dedicated to it, I think that's just my personality type. I mean, whatever I'm going to do it right. I don't like to do something halfway, so, yeah.
That's a great attitude. and so I guess, one of the things that I always enjoy about reading your blog is that you're very motivational in terms of, posing questions about, I don't know how to best phrase it, but, in terms of staying motivated, what keeps you motivated. So along those lines, what kind of advice do you have for runners that are just starting out themselves, maybe either really just deciding to take that next step or, become a runner or maybe sign up for their first race, or those that have already kind of made that step and are trying to get to that next level?
I guess my advice would be, take it slow, learn to like running. A lot of people these days, what I see is, and I don't know if it's people with midlife crises, if it's the new way to do it or what, but a lot of people just go out and say, I'm going to run a marathon, mm-hmm. And they go out and they, go gangbusters and they might get hurt or they might get burned out really quickly or whatever else. I think take your time with it, gradually build up. Learn to like running for running, not for crossing that finish line. Mm-hmm. I understand why a race is going to be motivational, and that's all great, and work towards that. But take your time, just stick with it, and don't push yourself. When you're starting out, just worry about becoming a runner and getting the miles in, not so much about your pace. Let your pace go right now. The first 6 months to a year, just you know, focus on learning to do it and enjoy it and take it all in without any kind of pace stress or race stress.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point in relation to pace and also the race. But one of the things I find most often when I work with beginner runners is they just assume that everybody runs so much faster than they do.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever noticed that as well. And I always tell people, you know, I say, well, you know, based on this and this, you probably are running about a 10, 11 minute mile or somewhere around that range. And they say, oh my God, that's so slow. And I say, well, not really. If you look at the average finishing time of every major marathon, it's usually in that 10, 11, 12 minute range. So
right. You're
pretty much running average. And I think once they kind of understand that they don't have to run as hard as they can every day, you're right, they start to fall in love with running. And it becomes less of a, this really sucks, to like, oh, this is actually quite enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Got a client actually that I worked with this year who she tried running many times in the past and it just never worked out for her. And so I went out with her at her very first run when she was trying it again and just got her to relax and just, you know, take it nice and easy and show her that it's fine and okay to be going at a comfortable pace. And, you know, she's still at it now and she loves it. And she just did her first half marathon and, you know, it's been great to watch her develop. So
awesome. Yeah, that's fun. And I guess along those same lines, I think you had a recent post about, I think it was something along the lines of ditching your Garmin, somewhere along those lines. And I like that one a lot because it's something that I grew up without that technology running. And so it wasn't even until I was, you know, out of college that stuff came around. And so I still don't use it today. And people wonder how I trained and did all that kind of stuff without a Garmin watch.
Yeah.
And I tell people these days that sometimes it can become a weakness and a crutch.
Yeah.
Have you found, you know, how do you work with athletes who feel like they're so dependent on their Garmin? How do you kind of convince them that they need to, you know, throw it away once in a while?
Yeah. I definitely have some people who are just so, you know, they cannot make a move without their Garmin. And so, you know, my first step is to take like a shorter, easy recovery run that they might have in their schedule and say, all right, I want you to go without your Garmin on this one. Just go. And you know, there's no point in keeping track of your pace on this one. The point is to recover and, you know, not worry about your pace. And so that's how I kind of ease them into it. And
I'm sure they fight you.
And I often hear back from them afterwards, wow, that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that run, you know, because, you know, look at their watch every 5 seconds to see where they are. So, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I like that idea. I think it's something I may steal from you because I think it's a great a great way to get people introduced to the fact that they just need to let it go every once in a while.
They can survive.
Yeah, exactly. I guess along the same lines, you know, if you were to look back, you know, what might be the biggest mistake that you feel that you've made in either your training or your approach to running that you, if you could go back and change or tell yourself 10, 15 years ago, you know, what would that be?
You know, I think it's going to go back to something I just said to you a little bit ago, and that is to not be in a big rush to have big accomplishments, you know, to kind of develop first. You know, I did run my first marathon not that long after getting into running and you know what, it was a great experience. I had a very good first marathon. But then I immediately, you know, I came off that marathoner's high, went right back into training, got injured, you know, it was just, I was overzealous. And I think looking back, you know, I wish I would have known then that there's plenty of time out there. You can take your time. You can, you know, develop as a runner. There's no need to rush things.
No, yeah. I think that's a great point, and it's something that I see a lot. I guess along those along the same lines as a follow up, did you have the trouble where once you kind of hit that first marathon that you wanted to make too big of a jump and struggled in the training? I know that happens to a lot of runners where they run 3:45, 4 hours for the first marathon, and then they say, I want to qualify for Boston, and that's, you know, they have to run 3:15, and they want to do it on their next one. Did that ever happen to you? Maybe not to that extent, but to that point where you were trying to reach for too much too soon?
Well, I was lucky in that I did qualify for Boston my first time out, but then immediately after I was like, wow, if I can do this on my first one, I can take 20 minutes off for the next one, and I do think it was that over-anxious, you know, like, get right back at it, train even harder, and I do think that's how I got injured. So I think it was a typical rookie mistake.
Right. Yeah, it happens a lot, and it's hard not to because you get excited. You're right. You come down from that marathon high, and you get excited, and then next thing you know, you're injured and banged up.
Yep.
Now, did you also go through what I call like the injury cycle, where you kind of get hurt and then you're kind of rushing back from trying to get hurt so quickly that you end up just getting hurt again or compensating and then something else gets in the way?
Yeah, I would say that's definitely what I went through when I went through that ITB injury. And, you know, just I kind of had a succession of things. And yeah, I think that's very typical. You're going to, you know, one injury can lead to the next, you know, and you have to be so careful when you come back from injury. I mean, you just have to, I think the biggest thing I've learned is if you're coming back from injury, do not have a goal race out there, you know, a couple months down the road. Give yourself time, just come back and ease into it, build that base up again, and then start working on your speed and working towards the goal again. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fantastic point, and it's something that it's so hard to do nowadays because races fill up so quickly that,
yeah,
you know, you need to sign up 2 years, 3 years in advance. You know, it's like, oh, sign up for Chicago Marathon 2016 today, it closes. but you're right, it's very important because then you end up, as I tell people, you end up training for that race instead of training by what your body's telling you.
Absolutely.
And that, you're right, that gets a lot of athletes in trouble.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it is tough to do when you've signed up a year in advance and something comes up. But
Yeah. It's hard to let it go.
It is.
But
in the long term, it always makes more sense because you end up, you know, you missed that one race, but at least you get to race sometime down the line as opposed to continuing to be hurt.
Exactly. Yeah.
So going back into the minimalist type of, transition, how do you advise runners to transition if there's kind of a, I know every runner is going to be different, but like, do you have like a basic outline that you kind of generalize to people in terms of the transition?
Yeah, I would say, you know, you first, you know, as far as a shoe, you want to go with something that's not super radical. So don't immediately go down to like a zero drop shoe. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's just going to be too much. But you know, not to promote one particular brand, but Brooks Pure Line, they've got a nice line going out there with the drop. Yeah. And they've also got some cushion in there. So you get that kind of mixture of, you know, traditional feel, but less shoe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good shoe to work with. And I think it's important to do some plain old walking around in your bare feet as much as you can. I mean, I live in my bare feet, and any shoe that I do put on my feet, you know, other than, you know, running shoes at the beginning when I was working with the Brooks shoes, but are going to be a minimalist shoe. I'm fortunate that I have a lifestyle that allows for that. But
right,
as much time as you can in your bare feet walking around, you've got to strengthen up those muscles that have kind of been dormant for a long time. And then do try to do some drills, things like barefoot jump roping as you're, and I don't mean jump roping in place, I mean moving down the street, you know, in your barefoot. That's going to really teach you to land nice and soft on your midfoot. So things like that, you know, that can strengthen your body, get your body more ready for it, you know, then throw on the minimalist shoes and go out and run. But, you know, even when you're transitioning to something like a 4 millimeter drop, you need to mix it up with your traditional shoes at first, you know, do a couple miles first in the minimalist shoe, then put your traditional shoe back on, and just patience. It's not an overnight transition. I do the majority of my runs in a zero drop now, but once in a while, the tops of my feet will tell me they're a little bit tender after a run, and they all throw back on a 4 millimeter shoe just to make up for that for a run. And
then so even now you still have to go back a little bit just to, especially when you're running so many miles, I can imagine.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, it's not for the impatient.
And runners are so used to being patient.
A lot, yeah.
Exactly. And in terms of kind of the mileage that you recommend, is there any general advice in terms of how many, because it's a question that I get a lot, you know, how many miles or meters is probably the better way to put it, you know, should they be running, you know, each week or each successive month?
With the barefoot in the
middle. Yeah, kind of when they've transitioned to start.
Boy, I don't have a real real hard and cut rule on that. I mean, again, it's going to be a little bit of listening to your body and seeing how you're adjusting. But, you know, to begin with, I mean, I would say no more than about 5 minutes at a time in you know, your bare feet or your minimalist shoes, you know, that for the first couple of weeks. And then, you know, try to build in a little bit more, maybe another, you know, get up to like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You know, so you don't want to be, you know, a month into it and out there running, you know, 3, 4, 5 miles, in your minimalist shoes. You know, even that is just a bit too soon for most people.
Okay.
You know, unless you are someone who came from, you know, if you've grown up barefoot and you're used to being in your bare feet and you've already got a strong, you know, strong all lower legs and feet, you know, otherwise for most of us who have been in our shoes for a lifetime, we're pretty weak down there and you need to get strong first.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great number you threw out there, because I think a lot of people, they think that within 3 or 4 months, they should be able to run 4 or 5 miles barefoot, or at least in a completely minimalist shoe. And I agree. I think that's probably a little too quick. It doesn't sound quick, but it's but it's kind of good to confirm.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And one last question on that. This is a question I get a lot. What's your take on doing transitioning using either soft surfaces like grass fields or whatever, or running on harder surfaces? I've kind of seen both arguments in terms of what's the best way to make the transition.
Yeah, I'm all about the hard surfaces.
Okay.
I mean, one big reason is just that, you know, in the grass, you're not going to see what you're stepping on, but you know, if you're barefoot, but you know, the hard surfaces, it allows you to feel that you're landing lightly, better. Okay. It's going to be a better teacher for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, on a soft surface, it's easier to get sloppy. It's easier to land on your heel. Whereas if you're on a hard surface, you know, your body's going to tell you, you know, ouch, that hurts. You know, you need to lighten up a little bit. So
no, that's a great point. I think you're right. Teaching your body that that feel is very important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I mean, in the end, what you're really after, I mean, you know, everyone gets focused on the heel strike, and yeah, you probably want to get away from the heel strike, but more than anything, you're looking to get your center of gravity underneath your legs underneath your center of gravity, and to land softly and not overstride. And so you need that feedback. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, you know, that's actually all the questions that that we had today.
Okay.
I really want to thank you for coming on the show. I think what you shared was fantastic, from just everything from how to adapt the training and the minimalist stuff. It's been fantastic. I really think everybody's going to enjoy it.
Great.
And again, we'll throw out everybody, if you haven't had a chance yet, check out Amanda's blog. It's really fantastic. And again, I thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm quite flattered to be on here. You know, I know the kind of people you have on here, so thank you for including me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Amanda.
Sure. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.